Blog Talk Radio.
With the NFL returning to the stage in Hollywood for the first time in over two decades, is Todd Gurley poised to become the city's next big sports star? You have found the NFC West preview edition of the Fantasy Flex.
And welcome to another edition of the Fantasy Flex. I am Nate, over on Twitter at Miller_RotoDad. Where can the people find you, Mr. Brad Wallace?
They can find me at UGA Good on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat.
All right. Before we get going with some NFC West projections, let me give you all the skinny on the FanUp Network app. The guys over there have created a fantasy football resource that not only tracks teams and scores across multiple platforms, but also provides the latest player updates and injury news, all while saving you time. The app can be found for Google and Apple devices by simply searching keyword FanUp. That's FANUP. Now, Brad, are you ready to dive into the NFC West?
Oh, yeah. Let's get it going.
All right, Brad. A couple episodes ago, we talked about Matthew Stafford from the University of Georgia. Now we're talking about a running back out of that same school, your alma mater, Todd Gurley, Offensive Rookie of the Year last year. Brad, is he going to finish as the top running back in fantasy this season?
I think he's got a very good chance to. I love me some Todd Gurley. My UGA boy is definitely going to be a beast in fantasy this season. He's going to be the focal point of that Rams offense. I think he'll see an increased workload in the passing game. He only had 21 receptions for 188 yards last season, and I think that's going to change this season. He's going to see an increase in targets. Jared Goff should be a little bit more competent of a quarterback, and I think that'll help boost some of those targets in the passing game for Gurley. He comes in at number two in my most recent updated rankings. I moved Adrian Peterson behind Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley. He's definitely a top five back, and I think he's going to rush for 1,400 yards and have about 10 touchdowns.
So you're now leaning toward the youth over the old man AP.
Yeah, as I was doing some research on some of those younger players, it's just their involvement in the passing game that I really underestimated, I guess, when I put Adrian Peterson first. He's just not as active in the passing game. So, yeah, I moved him down, got Gurley at two.
I hear you there. I really like Todd Gurley as well. He's definitely in that top three for me. A healthy Le'Veon Bell, in my opinion, will be the top guy in 16 games over, you know, like I said, if he can make it to that 16 games. Le'Veon Bell is my top guy. I'm kind of with you on Gurley in that number two spot, and I see him and Adrian Peterson very similar, with the age factor definitely favoring Gurley. You brought up Jared Goff. How do you see that Rams quarterback situation? I think they're kind of leaning toward Case Keenum as being their number one right now. But this is the summer. Jared Goff was a high draft pick. Are they just kind of making it where Jared Goff here beat out Case Keenum?
Pretty much. They're just not going to hand him the job. So Keenum may be the number one right now on the depth chart in the summer. But, yeah, when the season starts, I'm pretty confident that Jared Goff will probably be their starter. And as far as his fantasy value, he's definitely nothing more than a deep sleeper. That Rams offense is going to run through Todd Gurley. They want to run the ball. They're going to pound it down everybody's throats. And I think Jared Goff will improve Gurley's pass-catching ability and maybe make some of those receivers a little bit more fantasy relevant. But, yeah, he's just a deep league guy.
Yeah, I hear you there. What about dynasty-wise for this year's number one overall draft pick, Jared Goff? Do you You like his long-term outlook, or are the Rams just going to be a run-first offense as long as Todd Gurley is healthy and there?
Yeah, as long as Todd Gurley's there, I think they're going to want to try to run the ball a lot more than throwing it. But, I mean, Goff, dynasty value, his a little bit, but, yeah, not as much as other starters. Carson Wentz, I think, has more dynasty value than Jared Goff.
So a wait-and-see approach for you on Goff. Some of that, leaning toward Todd Gurley, he's an outstanding running back, but some of that is probably going to be what do the Rams actually have in some receivers? Kenny Britt, Tavon Austin, either one of those guys excite you? They sure don't excite me.
No, not too excited about either of them. Tavon Austin hasn't topped 475 yards in a season in his entire career. He could have his best season in 2016, which with a much improved passing offense in LA, but I don't think it's really going to be enough to make him that fantasy relevant. His games tend to be boom or bust. He has a lot of yards and touchdowns, and they come in only a few games. So, yeah. And then Kenny Britt, he's never had 1,000 yards or 10 touchdowns in a season in his entire career. He's just a wide receiver 3 or wide receiver 4 for me.
Yeah, he's kind of a post-hype guy. Britt, many had high hopes for him a few years ago, but I think he's had some games here or there, but most people just kind of passing on him now.
Yeah, that ship has sailed.
Took a couple of receivers, pass catchers in the fourth round of this year's draft. Took that number one overall pick, Jared Goff, and then added Pharaoh Cooper out of South Carolina and Tyler Higbee, a big, big wide receiver turned tight end target out of Western Kentucky. How do you see these two guys? Any big time rookie years out of either one of them?
I definitely don't think Pharaoh Cooper is going to have much of an impact. He's 5'11", 203 out of South Carolina. He only ran a 4.6 3.40 and only has a 31-inch vertical, so he doesn't have impressive physical numbers and attributes. I think it would take an injury to Britt or Austin for Cooper to have any fantasy value whatsoever in even deeper leagues. Now, Tyler Higbee, I think he has real sleeper potential. He's 6'6", 250 pounds. The Rams took him in the fourth round out of Western Kentucky. They're going to have to throw the ball to somebody at the tight end position, and I think Higbee has the physical attributes and characteristics where he could be that guy. I think he's got some deep sleeper potential.
Yeah, that veteran tight end Jared Cook has moved on to Green Bay, spent the last couple of years in St. Louis. Higbee doesn't have a whole lot in front of him on the depth chart at tight end. Like you said, this guy's a monster, big target, 6'6", big reach. He actually went to college as a wide receiver, was turned to a tight end because of that frame. The knocks on him are actually in blocking. I was going to have to learn that. But this is a guy they can line up wide in the slot anywhere. And how about this stat for you, Brad? 2 drop passes and 55 opportunities over the last 2 years. This guy's as sure-handed as it gets. He could become a red zone threat for them and really be a, like you said, a sleeper at that position. Another rookie tight end, and moving on to Seattle, Nick Vannette. But he's behind a guy who's got a lot of people scratching their heads about what he'll be in the upcoming season, Jimmy Graham. Is Jimmy Graham going to bounce back or bust? And does Nick Vannette, third-round pick out of Ohio State, have any value in that Seahawks passing game?
You know, I actually think Jimmy Graham does have some bounce back potential. He may not eclipse those numbers, those stellar numbers that he had in New Orleans a few years back. But I think if he can stay healthy in that Seattle Seahawks passing attack that seems to have increased in numbers, at least last season, I think some of that is going to stay the same with Marshawn Lynch retiring, Thomas Rawls coming into the season questionable, you know, with that ankle injury and whether or not he's going to be ready to go in week one. I think they're going to throw the ball just a little bit more than some people were thinking in Seattle. So Jimmy Graham only had 606 yards and 2 touchdowns in 11 games in 2015. It was his first season that he missed more than one game in a season. I think he has real bounce back potential. I think he's going to catch, he's going to have about 900 receiving yards, and I think he's going to catch 7 touchdowns. So I have him just outside of my top 10. I have him coming in at 13 right now, but I think he has potential to be a definite top 10 tight end and maybe even come close to a top 5 tight end.
I hear you there. I kind of like Jimmy Graham more than some people do as well. I agree with you. The Seahawks are passing more with Russell Wilson. They're not going to pass as much as Drew Brees and Sean Payton's offense, but they'll pass enough to where he has a really high ceiling, probably a low floor as well. It's going to take a Jimmy Graham injury for Vinette to be relevant this season in fantasy leagues, correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't see Nick Vinette having any value unless Jimmy Graham gets hurt. Maybe in a deeper dynasty league, Nick Vinette could have some potential, but I don't think so.
Okay, and talking about that Seahawks passing game, Russell Wilson, the Super Bowl champ, 2-time visitor to that Super Bowl. Where does he rank among the NFL quarterbacks?
Russell Wilson comes in at number 3 in my QB rankings. I think he's going to have a really big season. A lot of people think he's going to have some regression as far as his passing statistics go. They think that Seattle is going to go back to more of that, you know, run the ball, pound it down your throat style offense. And I don't think that's going to be the case quite. Maybe they might not throw as much as last season, but I think it's going to be more than they traditionally have over the past few years. So Russell Wilson has seen an increase in his passing yards each season of his career. He had 4,024 passing yards and 34 touchdowns in 2015. And he's had at least 489 rushing yards every season of his career. You got to love that rushing production. And I think the passing yards are going to increase a little bit. I think he's going to have about 4,200. I think he's going to throw 35 touchdowns. And he's going to add in about 600 rushing yards and maybe 2 or 3 touchdowns on the ground. So I think Russell Wilson is going to have a really big season. Top 5 quarterback for sure. Probably top 5 fantasy player this season.
Well, all right. What's the highest round you'd take him in a 12-team standard format league?
Russell's got to fall a little bit because I really like to wait on quarterbacks personally. Highest round, depending on, I guess, how the draft pans out, if there are players I'm looking at and, you know, round 3 are all the ones I'm targeting are gone, I might take a Russell Wilson in round 3, ideally round 4 or 5.
Yeah, I'm feeling that round 5. That's I'm on board with that. Round 3, boy. I'm hoping I can really find somebody to allow me to avoid a quarterback in my top 3 picks. I'm a guy who has leaned toward, you know, the Aaron Rodgers of the world early in drafts, but that's partly knowing my draft room in my local leagues and my other league. I mean, most leagues, I'm waiting on quarterbacks as well.
Speaking of Russell Wilson, a guy I would reach on more so than Russell Wilson, but yeah, you got to know your draft room for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And our particular local league that we've been involved in for years, quarterbacks tend to jump up and go in earlier rounds. Speaking of Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin, he had his moments in his career, and then last year he just exploded. And the little guy, sub-6-foot, caught 14 touchdowns. He's got a new contract in hand coming off his first 1,000-yard season. Is Doug Baldwin going to be a top-10 receiver this year?
I don't think he's going to be a top-10, but like you said, career-high 78 receptions for 1,069 yards and 14 touchdowns. I see some touchdown regression coming big time. He's not going to be a top 10 receiver. He could still have some value this season in drafts if he falls, and a lot of people are kind of the same mindset that he's definitely going to have touchdown regression. So he, if he falls in some leagues, he could have some value. But I think he's going to catch about and probably have about 8 touchdowns, because I think that Seattle Seahawks passing game is still going to be pretty prolific.
Yeah, and I think his touchdown ability potential comes on the help of Jimmy Graham, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if Jimmy Graham gets hurt again, then there's a higher chance that Doug Baldwin could get closer to that 14-touchdown mark. But with a healthy Jimmy Graham, he's going to soak up a lot of those red zone targets. Yeah, definitely limits what Doug Baldwin can do as far as scoring.
So behind Jimmy Graham and Baldwin, and some people may actually even like Doug Baldwin's supporting cast even more than Jimmy Graham, but I keep hearing a lot about Tyler Lockett. Jermaine Kearse has been there putting up decent numbers for a few years now. Who is the number two wide receiver behind Doug Baldwin? And are Kearse and Lockett, are they number three receivers, possibly higher, maybe lower?
The number two, if you're talking purely wide receivers, it's got to be Tyler Lockett. He had 51 receptions for 664 yards and 6 touchdowns in his rookie season last year. I think he's got real top 20 wide receiver potential. Part of Doug Baldwin's touchdown regression is going to come from Jimmy Graham, but I think the other part is going to come from Tyler Lockett coming in his second year in the league and, you know, Russell Wilson looking his way a few more times. So, Tyler Lockett, yeah, number three, number two, and like I said, top 20 upside potential. Jermaine Kearse, he's a deep league flex guy at best.
Okay. I've always kind of liked Kearse a little more than that, but the numbers just never seem to consistently come from him. Doug Baldwin really broke out, and yeah, Lockett, he might be a rising star there in Seattle. It's still kind of weird to me to think of Seattle as a pass first team, perhaps. I mean, but that backfield in Seattle might have a lot of talent, but it's full of kind of unproven guys. Marshawn Lynch gone. You've alluded to that. Ty Rawls, the lead guy there?
I think so. I'm high on Rawls. I think he's going to be healthy come week one. I think he's going to have plenty of time for that ankle to heal. And as long as everything goes well in the rehab process, I think he's going to be good to go for week one. He averaged 5.6 yards per carry for 830 yards on 147 carries last season. I have him inside my top 10 at running back, although he probably won't be drafted like that. He'll be a third, fourth round value guy, unless reports come out as you get closer to August that he's 100% healthy and good to go for week one. Yeah, he's going to be a value pick in the fourth or fifth round with that top 10 running back potential. I think he's going to rush for about 1,300 yards, add in 8 touchdowns. So he's got, you know, top 10 running back potential.
So you see him as a clear lead guy. And I got to tell you, if he's in that fourth or fifth round, I'm probably jumping on him. But I like the rookie out of Notre Dame, C.J. Procise, third round, 90th pick overall by the Seahawks. Some people see him as a sleeper, could cut into Rawls. Rawls has never carried – he was impressive last year, but he's never carried the load for an entire season being the lead guy. What's Procise's value?
I mean, if Rawls does get hurt, Procise's value is, you know, increases a lot. But I think he's mainly just a third down guy. I don't think he quite has the physical attributes to be a workhorse, three down back. I think he's got some good PPR value because of that. If Rawls does, you know, get hurt or doesn't make it back for week one, yeah, Procise has number two running back potential. But, yeah, I think mainly he's going to be that third down back, change of pace back that's going to come in and spell Rawls and give him a break.
All right. Well, on to Arizona and a running back that no one's sleeping on after a second-half surge in 2015, David Johnson, is he a clear top five? And does he have, like we talked about with Gurley, ability to be the number one running back for fantasy?
I think David Johnson definitely has that upside potential to be the number one back in all of fantasy. He's inside my top five. I have him at four. He had 139 rushing yards through week 12. Then he became the starter in week 13 and proceeded to rush for 442 yards in five games, while adding another 216 yards through the air and five combined touchdowns in five games. Other than Cam Newton, he had arguably the hottest finish in fantasy last season. As long as he what coaches have said is that David Johnson is the feature back, and somebody is going to have to take that job from him. So given health, David Johnson is going to be that feature back, I think, in Arizona, and he's going to rush for 1,200 yards, eight touchdowns, add in 600 receiving yards and four touchdowns through the air.
All right, and that is a crowded backfield there in Arizona with veteran Chris Johnson and then Andre Ellington. I mean, that's quite some talent in that backfield. Ellington has had injury concerns. Johnson's getting up there in years. Chris Johnson, that is. David Johnson, yeah, I'm with you. He's about to have a huge season, and the coaching staff out there is only backing that up. They not only have a lot of talent at running back, this offense is just sick. I mean, they're three wide receivers. I keep hearing a lot of debate across the spectrum about Fitzgerald, Brown, and Floyd. Is that the best trio of wide receivers in the NFL? I, for one, think it is. Brad, what do you say about that?
They just might be. Larry Fitzgerald had, you know, such a hot start to the first half of last season. He had a career-high 109 receptions last season. That made him top 10 in fantasy wide receiver rankings at the end of the season. Most of that production, like I said, came earlier in the season. From week 11 on, he didn't top 100 yards and only caught two touchdowns, one in week 16 and one in week 17. He hadn't had 1,000 yards in a season since 2011 before last season. I definitely see Fitz, you know, regressing and sliding back probably more to that number three receiver in that offense behind both John Brown and Michael Floyd. So I'm down on Larry Fitzgerald, but I like both Michael Floyd and John Brown. Michael Floyd struggled with injury to start 2015. I believe what he had a broken thumb. He's in a contract year this year, and he had 400-yard receiving games in his last seven in 2015. Michael Floyd is going to have a big season. I think he's going to have about 1,200 receiving yards and eight touchdowns. And John Brown is going to be right behind him. He had 1,003 yards last season and seven touchdowns on 65 receptions. He caught four of those touchdowns in his last seven games, and I think he's going to see an increase in targets in 2016. I got him at 1,100 receiving yards and nine touchdowns. So John Brown, Michael Floyd, those are the two receivers you're going to be looking to target in drafts, because I think a lot of people are going to reach and take Larry Fitzgerald a little too high for where his fantasy production value is going to be based on his name. And then I think a lot of people are going to forget that most of his production came in the first half of last season.
I'm going to agree and disagree, Mr. Wallace. Larry Fitzgerald, I'm a longtime fan of his, going back to his Pittsburgh days in college. Let's put into perspective exactly why Larry Fitzgerald. Well, a big part of the reason why he hadn't had a big season before last year in quite a while. Quarterback injuries, quarterback inconsistency. That's been the name of the game in Arizona. Carson Palmer was around for an entire year last year. There is a lot of mouths to feed, and I don't think any of these three, Floyd, Brown, or Fitzgerald, are a number one in a 12-team standard league. But I would direct your attention to this. Yes, he faded away in the last few weeks of the regular season. Look at the first playoff game against Green Bay, eight receptions on 12 targets, 176 yards, and a touchdown. A very memorable touchdown. Fitz is still a wide receiver too, in my opinion. He's going, that offense is so good that they are going to be able to support three stellar wide receivers. And a big reason for that is there a tight end situation in Arizona?
No, there's definitely not. They do not throw to the tight end at all. Jermaine Gresham, he's doesn't have any value except in the deepest of leagues. So they throw the ball to wide receivers and running backs in Arizona.
Yeah, so you're not so as far as Larry Fitzgerald, one more time, that playoff game against Green Bay, let's be honest, the whole Cardinals offense faded against Carolina's stout defense. But Larry Fitzgerald was awfully impressive in that first playoff game.
Yeah, he was. Did he have Norman on him very often, though, in that game?
No, I don't mean Carolina. I mean in Green Bay.
Oh, in Green Bay, not Carolina. Yeah. I mean, he's a veteran. It was a playoff, you know, game. I think he stepped up in the when the lights were shining brightest, where some of the younger receivers might not have handled the pressure so well. I mean, I could see Larry Fitzgerald being a number two. It could happen, but I'm going to stand by. I think he's going to be more of a number three because of a healthy Michael Floyd and John Brown. I think they're going to step up next season. Yeah. So,
all right. I mean, I can kind of see them all three coming up with 1,000 yards, and I think they're all going to be, if you're in a standard league, standard depth league, play starting three wide receivers, all three of these guys are probably worth a spot as a starter most weeks for you, because they're going to throw it around enough, spread around enough to where they're going to put up enough points to top 40, they all three could be top 30 wide receivers in my opinion.
And oh yeah, they
as
definitely
far as the one who
come
does
in my top 40. They definitely all come into my top 40 for sure. I have two of them inside my top 30. I think you know which two those are, but yeah, they're all going to have fantasy value for sure.
Well, give us a projection on the guy that throws in the ball, the veteran Carson Palmer.
I mean, his biggest issue is always health, as long as we're talking about regular season versus playoffs. but, I think he'll stay healthy. I don't have him as high in my quarterback rankings as probably some people do. I have him down at 8. I think he still has, you know, top 5 QB potential. He's coming off a career high 4,671 passing yards and 35 touchdowns, and a career low 11 interceptions when he's played all 16 games. Health, like I said, is always a concern with Carson, and he's played in all 16 games only 7 times in his 13-year career, and he's played in 10 or less games 3 times in his career. If he can stay healthy, he'll be a top 10 quarterback. You know, dance probably around that top 5 range. I have him projected at about 4,200 passing yards and 28 touchdowns. There haven't been many quarterbacks that throw more than 35 touchdowns the year after they threw 35. So I think there'll be some regression in that area. Maybe David Johnson taking a few more touchdowns on the ground as he breaks out this season. So Carson Palmer's still going to be a viable fantasy starter, though.
Yeah, definite number one in a 12-team, even a 10-team league. I'm kind of with you, David Johnson. He's probably going to cut into Carson Palmer's over 4,600 yards and 35 touchdowns last year. It's a fun question. This is one I've debated with a few folks. Not really fantasy relevant, but just a fun topic. Carson Palmer, NFL Hall of Famer, over 40,000 passing yards, 259 touchdowns. I think he's probably got to win a few more playoff games before he calls it quits. What do you say, Brad?
Yeah, his playoff performances have not been very good, and I think that weighs heavily a lot of times with the voters. So if he can win a playoff game or two, I think he might have a chance to make in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he's definitely got the numbers to do so. He needs to have some success in the playoffs for sure.
Well, I think we're pretty confident in saying that Blaine Gabbert and or Colin Kaepernick are not going to be Hall of Famers, right, Brad?
Yeah, unless either of them have a drastic turnaround in their NFL career, I don't think either of them are going to be Hall of Famers.
Who is going to be the starter out there, in your opinion? I don't think they're fantasy relevant outside of the deepest of deepest, no matter who it is. And what can they do with Chip Kelly's, what he's known for, his offense?
It's probably going to be Blaine Gabbert. A lot of people maybe hope that Colin Kaepernick can get his head on his shoulders straight. He's definitely an athletic specimen at quarterback. His mobility is, you know, on par with the faster quarterbacks in the league, Russell Wilson, even the Cam Newton, because of the size he's got. It's going to take a lot of work. I think Blaine Gabbert's probably going to end up being that starter. I mean, he had a pretty decent season last year. But like you said, neither of them are going to be, you know, fantasy starters, except in maybe the deepest of two QB leagues. I think there's a lot of questions with Chip Kelly coming in and implementing his system, how some of these players are going to adapt to his system. So I feel like it's boom or bust for a lot of these players. You could really see that offensive system come in there and create some, you know, fantasy stars if they, you know, can stay healthy and learn the system. But at the same time, it could come in there and none of the players, you know, fit the system and nothing really gets going. And I mean, I could see the 49ers winning two games, you know, and at the same time, Chip Kelly's system, he comes in there, everybody adapts to it, the offense becomes more explosive, and they end up winning, you know, 6, 7, 8 games. So it's one of those real question marks going into the, you know, the start of the fantasy season. So as of right now, I don't think either of them really have value in standard leagues, though.
Yeah, and I think maybe the one guy who's not a question mark for the 49ers, that his health might be, but his stature on the team probably isn't. Carlos Hyde, the running back, people have been kind of calling for a breakout for him a couple years now. Is he ready for that, and can he break into the top 10 running backs?
I agree with you. It all depends on health for Carlos Hyde. If he can stay healthy and string 16 games together, I mean, he definitely has top 10, even top 5 running back potential. I mean, I think he's shown that he has the talent. It's just, can he string 16 games together? And I don't think he will, honestly. He showed in college that he has, you know, good hands, good pass-catching ability. So in a Chip Kelly system, he's definitely got high upside. I think we'll see an increase in receptions and receiving yards. But, again, I think health becomes a factor. I think he's going to rush for about 1,000 yards, maybe 7 touchdowns, and add in about 200 receiving yards.
Yeah, and he absolutely exploded in Week 1 last season against Minnesota. And a lot of people were like, see, we called that breakout. But really didn't repeat it. In that Week 1, 168 yards and 2 touchdowns and 26 carries. And then he proceeded over the next 7 games total that he played before his injury, averaging 67 yards a game. He was on a 1,070-yard pace, and he found the end zone 3 times. But, yeah, that injury struck. I think Carlos Hyde, he might be the only guy to take a second look at in the San Francisco offense. But I think you're big on a particular wide receiver, but can Torrey Smith be a number 3, maybe even a number 2 wide receiver in a standard league with that quarterback situation?
Oh, yeah, I'm very, very high on Torrey Smith. Honestly, didn't realize that he was as young as he is. I don't know why, for some reason, I thought he was older, but he's only had 5 years in the NFL. He's only 27, so he's still in his prime, and I think he's ready for a huge bounce-back season after career lows in receptions and yards in 2015. Chip Kelly's offense, high volume, and who else is Gabbert or Kaepernick going to throw the ball to in San Francisco? So, yeah, Torrey Smith, I moved him up in my rankings. I've got him actually inside my top 30. I think he's going to be a surefire number 2 receiver and has potential and upside of being a top 20 receiver.
Yeah, I've always liked Torrey Smith as well. One thing's for sure, he is big play guy. I don't know that how much of the only catching 33 of his 62 targets last year had to do with him. Quarterback issues were in San Francisco last year, and we've already talked about them going into this year. On those 33 catches, though, 663 yards, a 20.1 yards per catch average, and found the end zone four times. But, Brad, am I hearing you correct that you like Torrey Smith more than Larry Fitzgerald?
Yes, I do.
I disagree, but let's move on. you talked about other receivers in San Francisco. Now, they drafted a Michigan State star in the sixth round. I was a little surprised that Aaron Burbridge fell that low after leading the Big Ten with 85 receptions and 1,258 yards last season. Can Burbridge move up that depth chart and make any noise in his first year, or is he more of a low-level sleeper that is a wait-and-see guy?
Yeah, I think he's a low-level sleeper, dynasty guy. I don't know, maybe towards the end of this season you might start to see him produce in fantasy a little bit, and that may be injury-related. You know, if some of the players ahead of him on the depth chart get hurt, it may create opportunity for him to, you know, step in and, you know, show some of that talent. But I don't think it's going to happen this season. I think you could draft him in dynasty leagues and he's a wait and see type player.
And one last guy there in San Francisco. This one I do believe is a sleeper for this season. And I may be the only one out there seeing it, but Vance McDonald, I kind of see him as a top 20, maybe even sneaking into a top 15 tight end, and nobody's talking about him. But guess what? No one was talking about Gary Barnidge in Cleveland before last year either. When Gabbert took over that offense around about mid-season last year, Vance McDonald proceeded over the last six games to average four catches for 44 yards, and he found the end zone three times. And in three of those six games, he went over 60 yards. Brad, are you feeling Vance McDonald at all?
He very well could be the next Gary Barnidge. I mean, I think he has that potential, and it all depends on if Gabbert is that starting quarterback because of the rapport they have. If Colin Kaepernick somehow becomes the starting quarterback for the 49ers, I'm not as high on Vance McDonald's upside potential to be that, you know, sleeper tight end that comes out of nowhere. But if Gabbert is the quarterback, yeah, I think he's got a chance. Definitely to be a sleeper tight end.
All right, Brad, very quickly here, as we're running short on time, our favorite segment.
Flex on or flex off.
All right, one more pass catcher for San Francisco. Brad, flex on or flex off Bruce Ellington?
Chip Kelly's offense features the slot receiver, and generally that slot receiver position is effective in a system that Chip Kelly runs. So I would have to say that Bruce Ellington has some real flex value, so flex on.
Okay. Seattle, we touched on this guy a little bit, not too much. Jermaine Kearse.
Flex off for Jermaine Kearse. Although the Seahawks' passing attack may be stronger than in years past, I don't think Jermaine Kearse has got flex appeal.
Okay. We led off with Todd Gurley. Let's talk about his handcuff, who I kind of think because of some – I'm seeing some passing problems in St. Louis. Trey Mason, does he have any flex value?
Without a Gurley injury, I don't think Trey Mason is going to be anything more than a handcuff. So flex off for me.
All right. And that loaded Arizona backfield, just offense in general. I've always liked Andre Ellington. Injuries have burned me. Flex on, flex off, Andre Ellington.
In a PPR league, he could have some flex value. He's going to be that third down change of pace guy that comes in to give David Johnson, you know, a rest on third downs every now and then. But in a standard, definitely no. Flex off.
Yeah, and these are all deeper league guys. We're not really going to recommend them for your standard leagues. But yeah, as Brad alluded to, PPRs, deeper leagues, you know, maybe they have some value, maybe they don't. Injuries definitely can clear the way for all those guys. Well, that'll about wrap things up for our NFC West preview. Brad, any last bit of fantasy advice regarding this division?
Nothing new. I reiterate, though, Todd Gurley, top five running back. I think he's the thing to look for with Todd Gurley is he's going to have an increased receptions and targets in the passing game, and Jared Goff is going to help facilitate that. So Todd Gurley, take him. Could be the overall number one running back.
Yeah, and you're in the first round with David Johnson and Todd Gurley, right?
Oh, yeah. They're both top five for me.
All right. As always, please be sure to hit us up with any comments, criticisms, or questions on Twitter at FantasyFlexPod. Also, you can now check out the Fantasy Flex at your convenience on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Player.fm, or our main feed at Blog Talk Radio. Until next time, when we size up the AFC West, I'm Nate. That's Brad.
West Flex.